The following podcast contains adult language, explicit content, and original opinions.
All content is the opinion of Comics Brew and no one else.
It is meant for mature audiences only, so be warned.
Podcast listeners and lovers, we're about to get into the newest episode of Comics Brew. It's a real fantastic episode, and one could even almost argue that it's super.
Man.
Comics Brew 259. Oh shit, yeah. Yeah, Comics Brew.
I am fine.
Yeah, I am super fine.
I really thought you were going to rhyme at the end of that one, but no, I'm glad Josh picked that up. Yeah, Comics Brew 259.
I am fine. I'm Josh.
I'm fine.
I'm Adam.
I'm Tyler.
We're totally calling this episode I am fine.
I'm fine.
We need to sign off with we are fine all have at
you,
the same time.
Yeah. Have you heard the, like, fine is an acronym? It's freaked out and insecure, nervous, and I never know what E is.
Excited.
Effervescent.
Excited erotic. Is easier. Effervescent is like bubbly,
it's probably
isn't it?
Excited.
Yeah. Enthused?
No, I haven't heard that, but I like it.
Engorged, enlarged.
That's just me.
Yeah,
right. Gross.
what are you drinking? You're drinking a cider.
Yeah, I had very.
It's like
very...
Petra's favorite cider.
We're both drinking ciders tonight. Actually,
yeah. She also likes that one. That you got.
Oh, this shit! So this is my favorite cider. I'll get to it in a second. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I grabbed just a single bottle of Crispin Honey Crisp Artisanal Reserve Unfiltered Hard Cider.
Can I try that?
Yeah, it's from.
It's muy delicioso.
Well, it's. Oh, I guess it's from Crispin.
It's from Crispin.
Yeah, but it's fresh pressed American apples with wine yeast and pure honey. You can taste the honey.
Oh yeah, no, Crispin's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. We. I don't know if you remember this, but about 2 years ago, Bad Flicks all got Petra a birthday present, and it was all ciders.
Oh yeah. Oh,
we all We all got her Crispin ciders.
Ooh, because they make. I've had other ones, but not this one.
They have a raspberry. They have
like a
raspberry
legit cider.
Cider,
not the hard ciders that have their own taste.
Sure,
that
sure,
an
yeah.
Actual cider taste.
That's like came from a press. And
yeah,
shit.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff. What do you got, Adam?
No, I am drinking Ace's pineapple cider. This is the same.
That was
cider.
Made in a vat.
Yeah, for sure. And this is the same cider. I think the last time I had
bad.
A cider.
It's still
no,
good.
No, you've had it before. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the last time I brought a cider to the show was this exact same one. I brought a cider a couple of times. This shit is amazing. It tastes like candied pineapples. Goes down nice and smooth and easy peasy.
Sure, it's also light too. So
And easy on the tum tum after last night. So
I've got Mac and Jacks. I got a growler of Mac and Jacks.
Just straight up old school, you know, Mac and Jacks after Amber.
I did a policing.
What's the other Mac and Jacks that
they
have?
They do a couple others, but the one you might be thinking of is Cascadian Dark Ale.
That's the one
that
I'm thinking of.
That was at the bar for a little bit.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
They also have a porter that they
Yeah, do. They've got a couple others. I've only ever had the African Amber and the Cascadian Dark
Ale. That's the
other
two I've had as well.
But I did a policing of the growlers that we've gotten over the years today.
Yeah.
I found
37.
No, I found 14.
Jesus,
14
damn.
Growlers.
Of various sizes.
Most of them are 64s. Oh. This size.
Yeah.
Do you want to know how many of them are Georgetown growlers?
10.
Yeah.
Is that actually right?
Yeah.
Got it in one.
So yeah. I'm gonna make a trip to Georgetown and be like, thank you for your service.
Yeah. Return them.
No,
because
they return them and they reuse them.
I was gonna say,
yeah.
I just fucking boil them and clean them out, steam
yeah.
clean them.
Yeah, they steam clean them.
Yeah.
Well. Lisa showed me the whole operation for like. There's two sides. Like they showed me the canning operation, and then they showed me like the retail reusable operation.
Oh.
It's really cool, man. So yeah, Mac and Jacks. Ironic. I'm drinking Mac and Jacks out of a Georgetown growler and a Manny's fucking cup.
Ah, there we go. Way to drink the best beer.
Way to betray my fucking people.
Yeah, you know, I like Manny's, but to be honest, there's a few bars that me and Tyler go to that only have Mac and Jacks. One of them being the most worst bar in the entire world.
The most worst.
Yeah. Dude, never have I seen a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
It is more worse than any other place you've ever been.
Yeah, I'm not wrong. I mean,
I didn't say you were.
The English might not have been proper, but the sentence fits perfectly.
I was merely commenting on how that works.
Yeah, they only carry Mac and Jacks at a couple places that we shoot pool, so I'll have Mac and Jacks instead of Manny's, and I'm slowly converting. Now there are times, better. Even when both are available, I'll still have a Mac and Jacks.
It's the better one. I'm sorry, it is.
Whenever I go there, if they have Bodies off, then they won me. Like, they win the Josh.
Oh,
what a prize.
That's what my mom says.
I bet. Probably every night. Oh.
Not a lot of bars have Bodies
that,
off.
What is that in reference to?
You betting your mom.
That's weird, Adam. It is weird. Adam, that's weird.
I don't know.
He's projecting.
Gross. You want Shannon, she's yours, man. You can have a fistful of Shannon and have more
gross.
For the other fist.
Well, we got
we have some news stories we can talk about.
News.
Okay.
Some very interesting things.
So we missed a week. But there was a lot that happened over the Memorial Day weekend, and
yes.
I hope everybody enjoyed the
comics. I turned 30.
Plays.
That was the most important thing.
Opinions differ.
All right, fine. Jury's still out on that
yeah,
one,
exactly.
But fine.
But on May 30th, the Library of Congress announced that collector and entrepreneur Stephen A. Geppi, G-E-P-P-I, so you tell me how that's pronounced.
P-P, how you said P-P.
Geppi. Has donated to the nation's library 3,000 items from his personal collection, including
gross.
Original printings and storyboards to document the creation of Mickey Mouse.
Holy
that's
shit.
That's like a one of a fucking... I mean, it's literally one of a kind.
Yeah.
So the picture that's shown with this article is him in front of a glass case that shows Action Comics number one, or Action Comics... number one that showed Superman for the first time. Walt Disney Comics number 10, Donald Duck. American Comics number 10 that shows the first appearance of Alan Scott, Green Lantern.
I was just going to say. I was gonna be
Detective
JSA
Comics
something.
Number 27 that shows the origin of Batman. Marvel Comics number 1 that shows the Invaders.
They have
the Young Allies.
They have Amazing Fantasy 15.
Plastic Comics, Plastic Man Comics number 1. And then, yeah, this really awesome, like, very, very worn picture of a storyboard with Mickey Mouse, like Steamboat Willie.
Damn. And, I mean, those are the notables from his 3,000 collection.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those are the ones that stand out.
I'm sure there's probably plenty of other stuff that we would geek out over.
Absolutely.
So is that, he donated a copy of Action Comics 1?
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought that was already in the Library of Congress somewhere, but
yeah, but this collection itself is—he donated his whole collection.
Okay,
so that means that's multiple copies.
We got another one
of Action number one being stored away is great. Hopefully, this one's of a pristine quality.
Yeah, we can guess. I mean, if he has 3,000 comics and they're all this old, I imagine he did take good care of it.
Right. That's what
I would take such good care of an original storyboard from Mickey Mouse.
So
I wonder when some Jim Henson stuff's going to make the Library of Congress.
It probably already has, to be honest.
Because I went to the MoPop exhibit of Jim Henson,
mm-hmm.
and they had all kinds of original storyboards and like just random sketches and doodle pages of his shit that's just like from ripped out binders and stuff.
So there's two quotes here that I want to read. One of them's from the Librarian of Congress, Carla Hayden, and the other one is from... the guy himself, Stephen A. Geppi. Yeah. The Librarian of Congress says, the Library of Congress is home to the largest collection of comic books, cartoon art, and related ephemera, and we celebrate this generous donation to the American people that greatly enhances our existing holdings. The appeal of comic books is universal, and we are thrilled that this new addition to the collections will make them even more accessible to people worldwide. And then the collector himself says, when I began collecting comic books as a young boy and then in earnest in 1972, I would have never dreamed that a major portion of my collection would find a home at the Library of Congress, alongside the papers of 23 presidents, the Gutenberg Bible, and Thomas Jefferson's personal library.
That's insane.
This gift will help celebrate the history of comics and pop culture and their role in promoting literacy.
You know, it is almost a uniquely American phenomenon.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If started here, It's been embraced everywhere.
Comics yeah. are worldwide, but like superhero comics, that's American.
Oh hell yeah! Like Cape Comics, that's us.
Well,
yeah.
Plus if he's got 3,000 items and he's been collecting since what 1970 something? You said
he said as a young boy, but then in earnest and, in yeah. 72. Yeah.
That means that he's got comics in a range that you know are from literally Action Comics number one, probably two. I don't know when the last or the newest episode that went in with this collection, but that means that he's got a very interesting, unique mirror on society throughout these years. Oh, for sure. Through the comic book.
Have you ever looked at some of the old, like, fucking Superman pictures? Like, I know Tyler will bring one up later, but some of the old, like, Superman covers would be like, no, Superman, you cannot date anyone other than Lois Lane. Oh, my God. You're married.
Yeah. Some of those old covers were just fantastic, especially the Lois Lane ones.
Like, I have to give up my job as a journalist to make sure my home is vacuumed for Superman.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, you get the like good would weird be really shit. Interesting just to look at the covers from all of this. Just, sure. You know.
Or in the late 70s when Wonder Woman was depowered and became like a spy master.
Yep.
And she became like out of Austin Powers, the spy who shagged me. She became Felicity Shagwell.
Basically, like, yeah. Really? She had that old mod outfit.
Absolutely, yeah. It
was a wild time.
Or like when they decided to go like Mod Squad with comics and make like a teenage young detective squad. Bunna bunna.
Yeah,
like,
oh, yeah. It's dude. American comics have a weird long history,
and they just change. And
it's got a very interesting slice of all of it.
Sure. Yeah,
or at least a lot of really influential pieces.
So this donation to the Library of Congress is absolutely a donation of Americana to our history. But see, this
so we're gonna rob it, right? Heist so time.
All great empires have had a library. All of them. If you can think of a great empire, they had a collection of knowledge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This one is ours. And I just wonder, like, is Trump going to be the one to burn it down?
We'll find out.
Or will the library?
I was going to say, we lost a lot of history when the libraries of Alexandria were torched.
Hell yeah. That was out of superstition and religious.
But I guarantee you, in that library, there was a lot of documents that were A, one of kinds and would have answered a lot of historical questions.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. There's a massive amount.
It would have definitely helped us date things a lot better. Because now there's a new theory going on that, like,
that we can only date via phones.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
That totally took me out of what I was
saying. That was good.
No, it was good. But there's a new theory out that the Sphinx is actually insanely older than
when we assume it is, yeah.
I mean, because it's... the way it's looking at it is it's just like the grooves on its head are a lot of archaeologists are actually thinking that's water erosion, and severe rains haven't been in the Nile for... like 4,000 years longer than we thought that the Sphinx was built originally. Mm. And they're also looking at it to where the Sphinx would line up perfectly with, is it Leo?
A constellation?
Yeah, 35,000 years ago, which would make it even older than we think.
Well, there's also there's a labyrinth underneath it. Just like, so every monument in ancient Egypt is a tomb.
Right.
Like, there's a labyrinth of tombs underneath the Sphinx that have been collapsed and rebuilt upon and collapsed and rebuilt upon before the end of the Egyptian civilization.
Right, yeah. So yeah, where so was that first whatever, collapse that could have been, well, yeah. You know?
Exactly. It's like the underground in Seattle. Like, Seattle's been a nation. Seattle's been a city since, like, the 1890s.
Right.
But it's been rebuilt on top of itself every 20 years until, like, the 1920s when it stopped sinking.
Yeah. That's why you can take the Seattle Underground tour. Have you ever done that?
I have. I've done it 3 times.
Have you done the adult version?
Hell yeah.
That's the one I want to do.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun, and like they try it. It really hinges on what tour guide you have. You got a fun tour guide that's also able to keep track of the assholes, like maybe us.
Yeah.
You got a good tour. You got a tour guide that doesn't give a shit and is just getting a paycheck. That sucks. It really does.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to do that.
It's fun. Have you never done it?
I've never done
it. Oh, my God. So you all gather, at least in the adult one, you all gather in a bar.
Right.
You start, you get a couple in, and then you just go on a walking tour. It starts in Pioneer Square, and it ends in Pioneer Square.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's fucking crazy. I need to do that. That's off topic.
I would love to do that. That'd be fun. I love that even in times that are as dark as now, and it's not that dark, but as dark as now, the Library of Congress is still accepting new stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they'll never stop. They're their own thing.
I love that. I love that, like, that's going to be its own entity. Do you think they at least as a preservation of knowledge.
How often do they turn stuff down? Like, you think if somebody just
I wrote this.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, sorry, bro. This ain't a piece of Americana. Get out of here.
I have Twilight. Get the fuck out of here.
I would be so sad if Twilight is in
the
library. I mean, but
give it 100 years.
Maybe it deserves to be because it is a significant part of American culture, for better or worse.
Or 50 Shades of Grey.
Are you? Oh, God, no. Please not that.
You know they're making another movie? Or they already have?
They are, that's a trilogy. I mean, it's done. It's done.
The newest trilogy?
All of it is done.
Oh.
Yeah, it came and went. Yeah, with not a whole lot of fanfare. Are you looking up?
Twilight. Oh, hang on. Twilight, the musical composition, is in the Library of Congress.
What's that?
The composition is by Evan Lloyd.
It's for the movie?
Like from the movie?
Yeah, it's from Chicago.
Oh, okay. Oh, so not anything like Twilight.
The musical Twilight from Chicago sounds like that's a piece in Chicago.
Yeah, I think that's
from the play
Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, like it's a piece of music from the play Chicago.
There's a photo called Twilight. There's noted music.
Sounds like the book is not, which is good.
Yeah, I don't see it. I'm in the Library of Congress's like database. Books, printed material. Shit. There's a thousand fucking copies.
I don't think it's in there. Thank God.
Twilight Echoes, Shakespeare's Twilights, Twilight Memories. I don't see an actual Twilight entry.
Then I think we're good. We're out of the
woods. It'll happen, though, like you guys said it would.
Give it like 100
All right, let's move
years.
On. Rob Liefeld has made the greatest concession to himself ever.
Yes.
So over the last, I don't know, 6 months, since the hype around Deadpool 2 and X-Force has happened again, and the resurgence of Liefeld as a...
Yeah, I mean,
person.
It kind of started happening with Deadpool 1, and he's always been in, like, a comic book culture presence,
mm-hmm.
Just because he's...
Undeniably.
He is a character. I mean, he is his own personality. He's a weird dude. He's got a lot of opinions, but he's also a joke. Like, people will joke about his art, how much...
Deadpool jokes about it.
Mm-hmm.
From a guy that can't draw feet.
Yeah, like,
Deadpool 2... You were the only one that laughed?
Yeah.
I was the only one that laughed at that.
The theater was silent, and I, like, laughed out loud, and I had to fucking stop. I was like, oh, I'm the only one that thinks that's funny.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, in Bloodstrike number 23, Bloodstrike's Brutalists, Rob Liefeld will be premiering the original parody character named The Pouch.
If anybody... just look at Rob Liefeld
the
art.
The Pouch, yeah.
And you'll see... Especially from the 90s, a lot of his characters have just shitloads of pouches on the belt.
A lot
like
of people
a bandolier
were doing that
pouch.
Shit in the 90s, though.
But Cable. Look
no,
at
but
Cable.
It all came
just
from
look
him.
At Cable.
Okay, valid point. Very valid
And who
valid
made Cable?
Point.
Fucking Liefeld.
No,
you guys are totally right.
But, yeah, so the pouch, just look. Guys, anybody
it's got
listening.
A gun that shoots pouches?
It's made a pouch. Pouches. It's a pouch gun.
Oh, God.
Made of pouches.
That shoots pouches.
Like, I love that Liefeld is so self-aware that he is able to do
and
this.
And if you notice in the shot,
that
no,
gives me
no
a...
feet.
Oh, yeah. No, it's pouches.
No, there's no feet.
It's just pouches.
No,
it
but
gives
like,
me a lot of respect
it's,
for...
like, it, the shot cuts off at the knees.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, there is... Like, he does not draw feet.
Yeah. No, and I do like creators that are not only good and influential, but they can take a step back and get, you know, get out of their own hubris and make jokes about themselves.
Sure, get out of their own head.
Yeah.
Like totally recognize their ego.
Yeah.
And be like, yeah, you know what? You're right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let us poke fun at this, because this is a little ridiculous. I don't know how to draw feet, and I'm an amazing artist.
Can you think of another comic book guy or artist that does this?
To this degree?
Not to this degree, but definitely is self-aware.
Oh, I can't. Like,
Johns?
Because nobody else is made fun of that much.
Jeff Johns?
For such specific things.
No, not for this, on this level, but Jeff Johns in...
Who's the chin man that draws all the chins the exact same?
Howard Chaykin?
No, Stuart Immonen? The guy who did Secret
Romita
Invasion.
Jr.?
Yeah. No, the guy who did Secret Invasion.
The guy that did Secret Invasion. Everybody
Lionel Yu.
Yeah, Lionel
Yu.
Yeah.
So I just rattled off three of them that do that, though. So
yeah.
It might not be exclusive to him.
So John Romita Jr., he does the whole, like, same stuff.
All the faces are the same shape in general.
But I was thinking, there's a issue of The Mighty Avengers that Deadpool references Blackest Night. And Jeff Johns has a editor's note in it, and he's like, my name is Jeff Johns, and I approve this quip. And I was like, that's funny.
Perfect.
It was right around the time, it was a Deadpool issue or an Avengers issue with Deadpool, right around the time that Blackest Night was releasing those rings with the issues.
Oh, yeah,
Deadpool
yeah.
had a really good solo run going on at that time, too.
Yeah.
Like, it was right around the time that, like, Suicide Kings came out. X-Force.
What was that? Merc with the Mouth.
Merc with the Mouth.
Right, yeah.
Was that collection to where it was all the shit that happened right after Secret Invasion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. when his rant started, our run started. And that was a really good Deadpool run.
You ever read Merc with the Mouth?
Yeah, I own it.
That's good. That's yeah. a good series. Those covers are great. They mimic Jaws and Night of Living mm-hmm. Dead and all that good stuff. Yeah. But I love that Rob Liefeld is just so ready with Bloodstrike Brutalist number 23. To premiere the pouch.
Jesus. Yeah.
As you look at him, he looks like he's wearing fucking hockey pads made out of, like, pouches. Literal
Dude,
pouches. Like,
is he going to have a line, I'm not wearing hockey pads.
Wearing pouches. I mean, I might
not
actually
pouchy pads.
Check
have
into
to
this.
Pick it up. Yeah.
I might have to. Like, it... I don't like to buy into this kind of like big character premiere hype stuff,
but
God,
this is
this
just
too
ridiculous
funny.
Enough to,
too
like...
Too funny.
I actually think it's... Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think it could be a good one. Could be good.
So, yeah, look forward to that. And with Bloodstrike 27?
23. Bloodstrike 23.
When's that come out?
Oh, man.
Ah,
man,
fuck it.
Great,
It's coming up.
Keep your eyes peeled for the pouch.
It'll be June or July.
Yeah, it's
Keep
soon.
Your pouches open, ready to put that comic in it.
June 27th is the release of the pouch. Or actually, Bloodstrike 23.
Were you laughing that hard at my joke?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't think it was that funny.
I thought it
I
was.
I thought you found something else over there that was way funnier.
No,
it
oh, was...
well, thank you.
That was great. Oh. Yeah, I really liked it. Adam, there are times I think you're funny.
Oh, thanks. I thought it was just me.
Netflix is going all out on a 6-issue series from Mark Millar and Olivier Coipel. Be honest, I was surprised by the artist on this one.
I was surprised they announced it with that. There was
so
going to be this.
Any
He's
farther,
an awesome.
When the story is over, I have a question that I want to pose to both you gentlemen about Netflix.
Okay, so Olivier Coipel and Mark Millar, after the purchasing of Millar World, Netflix is releasing The Magic Order starting in June, coming to a comic shop near you.
Mm-hmm. Done Netflix. By Netflix. Like, this is really interesting, but it looks like
watched
the preview.
I had this totally backwards. I mean, I'm still trying to look into
it's not going to be a movie. Title.
See, I was right there with you when this first story, like, first was teased though, a couple months ago.
Yeah,
that it was going to be released as a comic and have a show going on with it on Netflix at the same time, which I thought was also a really interesting idea.
I'm here on Entertainment Weekly.
No, for sure.
It's just a comic
and even
book.
After the preview, it's like it's clearly only for comic shops, but. I mean, still, is there room in the world for something like that to have not only take place, because I know they've done it before, but to be successful? Because a lot of them seem gimmicky and kitschy and shit. Could they release something side by side to where both
Maybe.
Are successful?
Netflix could.
Yeah, that's what they have,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, Netflix, no doubt. Are you? No question.
Yeah, I...
Are you kidding me?
I think they could very easily do that. And you know what? I still think they would make a show based
well,
on
maybe
it.
Just
they
like,
let it get through 12
just
issues
like
and
Marvel
then they
and DC,
season or something.
I mean, just like Marvel, DC, or even Image or Vertigo, comics are a, like, proving ground for concepts for movies.
No, true. No, absolutely.
Well, especially for Mark Millar. Like,
sure, yeah, exactly. Yeah, this guy. Yeah.
He does
Kingsman,
that a lot.
Kingsman, both kick-ass movies. Like, yeah. There's more to come.
Yeah. And I thought when this story first broke a couple months ago that's what it was. It was his first, one of his first, like, direct to, like, I'm making a comic that is going to be a movie/show.
No. See, and I thought, like, they would be released roughly at the same time. And,
A new 6-issue comic from Mark Millar and Olivier Coipel to mark the momentous occasion. They've designed a trailer teasing the arrival of the Magic Order.
Yeah, it's an interesting little trailer that sets up
magic
the
in the current world where there's, like, it looks like there's wands and wonder and everything.
Yeah.
But kind of like how Bright was, but it's now the modern age.
Sure.
And
he pitched it as The Sopranos meets Harry Potter.
Right. And so that sounds like it won't be shitty like Bright was.
Millar's quote is, "As a kid, I always used to rationalize the fact that there were no monsters, since nobody's ever seen a monster or caught one on camera. With the idea that there are people who take care of this, and that's why you never see it. So the idea is there's a family of wizards who have been around for thousands of years, and they take care of bad stuff. They live among us as stage magicians and other eccentric jobs during the day, but at night they get together and take care of our problems.
The fucking Pine Guard.
So I don't know, man. It's really cool to see that, like, this is going to be in comic shops in 2 weeks. In
I'm definitely picking that up.
When you pick this up, let me know, because I want to read this. This looks really interesting.
I better let Jim know next week that I want a copy.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, Jim's no longer in charge of his shop.
He's in charge of his shop. He's not running it day-to-day.
He's not the day-to-day guy.
He's the purchaser.
Yeah, his brother's going to be running it. He was talking about that a while ago. He's taking a step back.
You had mentioned that like a month or two ago, yeah.
Yeah.
So here's my question.
I thought I had mentioned it.
Maybe it was you, but I don't remember. Here's my question to you guys. Netflix has been, killing the game in almost every avenue and aspect that they go on. Now they're getting into comic books. When does the Netflix rubber band quit expanding and start contracting back on itself?
Who knows?
You know, does it happen soon? Does it keep expanding until?
Well,
the
you
got to
remember
breaks?
That Netflix has actually been an entity since like the late aughts.
Yeah,
wait, I'm not talking about just the
like
the
they built
service.
They built
about,
their
like, when they became an actual production studio.
Sure, you know, sure. Which is like 2013, 2014.
Right.
Like House of Cards was their first original series.
The first one?
Yeah,
they actually are the most. It might be the wrong word. Most valuable entertainment company in the world right now. They have somehow surpassed...
Independent, I would say. Yeah.
Independent. I mean...
Because there are other services that stream underneath a parent company.
No, I think they've... As a production studio, basically, they are now the most valuable. They're worth more than, like, Disney.
Disney?
They're not worth more than Disney.
It's some weird nebulous thing like that, but they're fucking huge. So, to your question, I think that depends on... It's impossible to guess because it's not based on views. They don't do anything based on views. It's going to be based on
revenue and subscription. Yeah,
revenue like subscription.
That's a good point, right? Because they're not selling advertisements based.
So
they're not selling.
Here's my little thing on it. Netflix is subservient to the ISPs that allow it. Mm-hmm. So no matter what, you can be subscribed to Netflix, but if Comcast comes out with a streaming service and decides to throttle Netflix, then there, no matter what, unless Netflix becomes its own ISP, there's going to be problems.
Not luckily, dude.
Well,
I'm saying, like...
Oh,
With the banning of net neutrality, there is a chance that Netflix could become a throttled service.
Really quick,
the power and clout that it has. I think that's why they're revamping up so much. They're trying to create a loyal user base.
They're all about getting people involved in net neutrality because of that.
They were late to the party,
the party, but they still embrace it fully.
To circle back for just a moment, I found the news article that I heard this from. It was for a small time on like Thursday last week before Memorial Day weekend. They were actually worth more than Disney on market share.
For a second?
For like a little bit on Thursday.
Okay. Is it when the Obamas announced that they're going to deal with Netflix?
Probably. Their market value was above $153 billion.
Jesus Christ.
Exactly. Like, that's how big they actually are.
Wasn't it started by a couple of college kids as a fucking...
It was a DVD service. It was a male DVD service.
I've had it since
then. Yeah, my dad had it since way back in the day. I remember he would fucking, like, juggle movies in his queue depending on the release dates.
And then they started expanding to Blu-ray, and people were like, yeah, that's cool, let's keep doing it. And then they opened their streaming service. And they opened their – I don't know if you remember this, but they used to send out discs to download the firmware onto your player for the streaming service.
I don't remember that at all. You had to
play the disc to get to the streaming service.
Really?
But then it was right around the switch between Xbox 360, PS3, and then the PS4 and Xbox One that it became an integrated software system.
Oh.
Yeah, I never had it with the disc streaming.
For the Wii, the 360, and the PS3, there was a Netflix stream disc.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Xbox at least really quickly dropped that. They did.
But the 360 never had a Blu-ray player.
No.
Which is what burned them on that. And, you know, the whole console wars thing, PS4, Wii U, 360, whatever.
Well, PS3 and 360.
Well, I think Sony ultimately won because now Blu-ray is standard. And Sony owns the Blu-ray patent.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Anyway, I'm excited about the Magic Order. I think that Netflix, to answer your question about the Netflix bubble, it will only snap or bounce back if they're unwilling to adapt to the situation they're in.
It's currently going on.
And guess what they're doing with the Magic Order?
They're going into comic shops. They're going brick and mortar. That's so weird. A mostly digital delivery system is going brick and mortar.
Yeah. So then do you think that
But they'll probably, I bet you they'll branch into Comixology. I bet they would be fools to do it.
I would be interested to see if maybe they start, depending on the success of this, if they have, like, when the first volume comes out of this, if they don't have a read online on Netflix, on the actual website
themselves. I think if they did that, I don't think they would do, like, hey, go and click page by page. I think they would do Comixology. Yeah. I think if they did their thing exclusively, it would look more like that trailer. They would do
like a motion comic.
They would do a motion comic,
which would still be really fucking cool, almost Max Payne cutscene style.
You have more to.
Oh no, that's what I was gonna say. Like, I think that's if they put it online on their service, it would be more like a motion comic,
which would still be fucking halfway really between cool,
a comic like, and a TV show. Mm-hmm. But
you ever watch the Watchmen motion comic?
No, I never did.
Mm, that's really cool. It's a 10-hour
fucking series.
Jesus.
I have not watched all of it.
Well, it's 12 issues, right? Yeah. So it's 12 issues narrated, and then has a little bit of motion behind it, including like the Black Freighter and shit like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's one more story we want to get through, and it's a story that happened a while ago.
We
were gone, and Damon Lindelof just decided to do what he does. Well,
quick background. There's going to be a Watchmen adaptation on HBO, I believe. Mm-hmm. Is it HBO? Yeah.
HBO.
And so it was announced a while ago.
We've talked about this for a while.
There wasn't a lot of solid details.
But it was always like, there's going to be an HBO Watchmen. It's going to be a long-form show.
Yeah.
It's gonna have a big budget behind it. Those are the stories that we've known so far.
And Damon Lindelof gave us a little...
It's going to be the head of it. Like, we knew that, too.
He gave us a little bit of deets.
So, he's got, like, a 3-page, like, fucking manifesto here that is, to be honest, it's a little daunting. Because he does it, he writes this, he released an Instagram post about where he wants to take the series and what he wants to do with the story. But he framed the whole explanation of his fucking manifesto like Dr. Manhattan is, I'm standing on Mars right now. The Earth is still beside me. I hear the ticking of a watch as my father tells me what parts go where. Like, it's that scene in Watchmen where you get the Dr. Manhattan ethos. You get him. So Damon Lindelof released this. I think it's like a 4-page. Yeah, it's totally like a 4-page monologue from him. And essentially what boils down to is he releases this monologue told like Dr. Manhattan's story. But he releases it and says, I have this huge, massive respect for Watchmen as a story. But I'm gonna do my own thing. I'm gonna make a non-canonical Watchmen adaptation that does not follow the story.
That is the weirdest fucking thing.
I'm gonna take Watchmen, that beloved thing that everybody loved from the 1980s, and I'm gonna make my own thing.
I mean, they also released some cast descriptions or character descriptions, and it was really vague, and they didn't really line up to the characters. And this was before this little release he did. And now that that's come out, it's pretty clear, like, oh, they're not making Watchmen.
They're making Damon Lindelof's superhero story.
They're making more like how Watchmen is Charleston Comics.
Yeah. Like
taken into, like, a, you know, an Alan Moore twist and put it on a little it's, world.
Or it's, not Charleston Comics, but it's Mile High Comics, or it's... What was that one that Captain Marvel spawned out of? Whatever that comic, Minuteman Comics.
Oh, yeah.
It's Minuteman Comics, but it's taken to Alan Moore's extreme.
Yeah, it's like he's done that with Watchmen. Like, he's taking Watchmen characters and then going, okay, here you go, boop, boop, and doing his own thing, which is, I think on one level, a really weird, like, extrapolation of the same way Watchmen was made.
Well, so Watchmen the movie, I think, is really faithful. I think a lot of it is shot for shot.
Oh yeah, Watchmen. No, it's unbelievably faithful. Like the comic is a storyboard for the movie,
exactly
for like 90% of it.
Mm-hmm. And then he changes the ending.
That's, yeah, well, for I think better for the movie, but you know that's another debate.
Sure,
I agree. But, I would agree with you on that.
But Lindelof's thing, like, I don't know if I'm down with it anymore.
I, you know, to be honest, I was skeptical to begin with.
Well, but, so was I, but I thought maybe part of the reason.
But you know, you have a 13. You have, if you have 13 episodes, you could totally tell the Watchmen's story.
Like you could have a really sick. Like I think it'd be the if you did an episode per issue.
Absolutely,
it'd be the 9th or 10th where Dr. Manhattan is on Mars, mm-hmm. and it's the whole non-linear storytelling stuff. Mm-hmm. You could actually do that. As a TV show, like Alan Moore said, that was unfilmable because of that.
Because of how the story's structured there. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
But I think that, like, if you HBO
had,
could
if
do
you
that.
Had the space to do that, it would work well.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. Now suddenly they had this great setup and something that could be made incredibly well. And then they apparently just shot the bed.
Yeah, yeah. Your head writer's like, I'm gonna take these loved characters that everybody knows.
Poop on them.
And I'm not gonna poop on them. I'm going to make my own poop out of them.
Yeah, like, she chew them up, shit them out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I feel like at this point, like, he does just want to make his own superhero show. So just let him make his own superhero
yeah,
show.
Yeah, then why frame it under the Watchmen umbrella?
Maybe like, that's why? How he pitched it as Watchmen and managed to twist things around for his own thing. I don't know. It's all speculation. But, I mean, until we get more info, it does not sound good to
it
me.
Doesn't. It really sounds like why would we even buy into this? And this is that thing, like, Damon Lindelof is like a good writer. Damon Lindelof is a bad writer masquerading as I have a bunch of good friends that are good writers.
He's like he's probably like George Lucas in the original trilogy. Like, he's got good ideas, but if you let him direct his own shit sure. and be totally behind the wheel, you get the prequels.
But like, or you get the last two seasons of Heroes. Like, it's yeah, his like, fault let, that Heroes sucks.
Let him get some ideas, but let people temper and filter it. But doesn't sound like that's happening here. I don't know. I do know. I'm not down with it yet, yeah. or anymore. I guess we'll see how that ends up. But I'm not too confident.
I want to bring up a couple really quick stories, real quick. One of them is that Patty Jenkins officially tweeted the logo of Wonder Woman 2.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman 84.
And this is after Geoff Johns kind of teased it that it would be set in the 80s, and then I guess, yeah, it was confirmed. Which is a bigger time skip than I thought it was going
to
be.
I thought it would be a smaller time skip as well.
World War One to the 1980s, that's pretty big. But they can't do the 90s because Captain Marvel's going there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they can't do like the roaring 60s or 70s because X-Men already did that.
I mean, I thought they would do either World War Two, or like she'd be kind of still... like a positive force, and World War II would be a little more of a down ending, and that would explain why she's been away from the world.
Sure.
That's kind of like in my
head. I was actually thinking like PTSD.
Maybe I thought...
Like the loss of Steve Trevor was enough to...
But I mean, the end of Wonder Woman like looks really hopeful with her leaping into the sun. And
it does.
So I thought it would be...
And then her part in Justice League where she's at the fucking terrorist bombing and stuff. Yeah. Like, yeah.
So I had assumed it would be boom World War II, and that would kind of be how to explain that. Or jump to the 70s and embrace, like, the weird, like we talked about earlier, her weird period of time there. Kind of adapt that.
A Big Brother story, I would love.
I think it's interesting they went with the 80s. I don't know what they're going to do with that.
Where is she?
I can't think of, like, a good Wonder Woman, like...
Like, geographically, where is she?
No, yeah, you know? I know what you mean geographic, like, where is she? But I also am thinking,
like, is she in, like...
What is the tone of this movie? What is it going to draw from a comic book era for her? I have no idea. It's just, like, I don't know what to expect from this movie anymore.
It would probably go from a more cinematography era. Like, it would probably go from, like, a more of the 80s movie era,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to going from, like, drawing from the 80s comic book era?
Yeah, probably. But
so you'd get a lot of, like, action, like... So stop me if you've heard this one, but Wonder Woman is a hard-as-nails action star. She doesn't play by the rules or take any gruff from the sergeant or the captain, but she knows how to get the job done.
Well, see, that worked better in World War II.
No, that would work great as she was Dirty Harry.
Yeah, probably.
You know what I mean? Like,
or any fucking cop movie of a cop that's
exactly
fucking
like
on the
Tango
fringes.
And Cash or anything.
So I don't know. I'm down with this. Actually, I think it'll
her in the 80s. It's gonna be big hair.
I think it's gonna be refreshing. Oh man, I wonder if we're gonna get a lot of old Linda Carter references.
Oh, sure, yeah. Or Ripley references.
Yeah. Oh,
just,
my God.
Just strong Sigourney Weaver character references, you know?
Either way, it's I like that they're keeping her movies in the past.
Yeah.
At least so far.
Her formative movies are in the past.
Yeah, and it's... I think it's a good little look for their cinematic universe for have her doing that kind of thing, because it lets them have the freedom to do whatever. Like, Wonder Woman is a... It's a good movie. I think, and it benefits by being a war movie.
Yeah. I have one more news story to get through.
Yeah?
Tyler, the director of Thor Ragnarok, his name is Taika
Waititi.
Are you
talking about
Waititi?
His new movie that just started?
Yeah, World War II Nazi satire film called Jojo Rabbit.
I am so down with this movie.
Hang on, let's break that down. World War II.
Yes.
Yeah. Nazi.
Yeah.
Satire.
Yeah.
And who is just the best?
Is he starring in this one as well?
I don't know if he's starring in it, but it has begun production.
Yeah, it recently started, like, as of this recording, because we're live a couple days ago, a week ago or so. I'm down with it. I've only seen bits and pieces of his other movies.
This is so tangentially comic book.
But, I mean, he did do Thor Ragnarok.
He's Korg.
Thor Ragnarok, you're probably going to like this movie, because the sense of humor and Ragnarok is so him.
Mm-hmm. I didn't print enough pamphlets.
Beat by paper. Little rock, paper, scissors joke.
Awesome. All right, Tyler.
All right.
We got to talk about No Justice.
We do. This is the last issue of the four-issue weekly series.
Yeah. We skipped out on two issues, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I did not see first of all, written by Scott Snyder, James Tynion, and Joshua Williamson.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read issue 3?
I did. Yeah, no, I read all of them.
Issue 3 had terrible art, to be honest.
It did.
Really terrible art. Marcus,
I feel
Toe
like that always
and,
happens with these ensemble books.
Sometimes, because, like, I don't know, the art on Justice League vs. Suicide Squad was good.
True. I feel like there's always, I guess I mean, there's always an artist whose pages are a little off.
Sure, so it turns out, Rob like, Rossi's were terrible.
This time it turned out to be like most of an issue.
Yeah, but issue 4 is beautiful.
Yeah. It's very good.
The art in issue 4 is by Francis Manapal.
Yeah.
So what do we learn? We learn that Vril Dox in the new canon is a bad guy.
Yeah, which, I mean, I remember when, I think it was issue 2? When he showed up, the very end?
2 is when he's revealed, yeah.
Yeah.
I realized that he's a backup.
I was asking you, like, what do you think he's going to end up being? I did not see him, like, so quickly being, like...
Well, because he's a part of the Legion of Superheroes, and you're just like,
yeah,
he's supposed to be a good guy.
Apparently not. I mean, maybe there'll be more development for him, but... Sure. So, yeah, he's a bad guy, and he's none too happy with the Earth Heroes and decides to, well, take up Brainiac's little plan of... Help me, because if you don't, Earth is fucked, and he speeds it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the quick ensemble moment of foiling the plan.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Charging that seed.
Yeah, so this is a Justice League comic, meaning that the good guys are going to win.
Yeah.
It's okay. You can know that. You can know that. The good guys win. That's fine. But the good guys are going to win with a little bit of ramifications.
So the whole thing is that there's these four Dark Titans.
The Omega Titans.
The Omega Titans. And they're there to harvest worlds. And each world has basically a predominant, like, tree.
Trait,
yeah. But embodied by these four trees. And one of them will be bigger than the rest and produce, like, a fruit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And... They manage to make it do so, but then they want to charge it with all four energies.
They milk that fruit.
They do, yes. And then the Justice League wins in the end.
It does. But they form three new Justice Leagues in the end of this. And
they
I think that's the takeaway from this, that Scott Snyder wanted to form three new Justice Leagues. He wanted to form his Justice League, the one that we all recognize, Seven.
Do we want to go through
Justice League Odyssey, Justice League Dark, and Justice League. That's what
the
it
only,
is.
The only thing from the Seven is, this is more of a JLU Seven.
Sure.
Except Martian Manhunter's not there. It's Cyborg instead.
Yeah.
Because it's Hawk Girl, Cyborg, Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman, Flash, Green Lantern, and Aquaman. This is the John Stewart Green Lantern.
Yeah.
So it really is like a JLU vibe. That the dark is going to be Detective Chimp, Swamp Thing, Wonder Woman, Zatanna, and Man-Bat.
Good team.
Yeah, I'm down with that, actually.
Yeah. Justice League Odyssey is the weirdest one.
Yeah, especially because every other character, besides Detective Chimp, I guess.
No, Dark.
No, I was going to say every other character in these teams kind of has a place in these books, but I guess Swamp Thing, Detective Chimp, and Man-Bat don't. But there is the wild card on the Odyssey team of Azrael.
Yeah, where'd that come from?
Yeah, like, what
he wasn't even in No Justice.
At all. I mean, neither was Detective Chimp or Swamp Thing, Man-Bat. Yeah. But
those all fall into the dark area.
Yeah, no, they've been involved in that kind of area of DC Comics in a while. Suddenly just throwing in Azrael, and in the background of that lineup, well, it's Azrael, Starfire, Cyborg, and... Jessica Cruz, Green Lantern?
Yes, yeah. It's
and then Darkseid in the background. It's like, dude, Azrael is outclassed.
In all forms.
Yeah.
What I love about this, though, is that the very end of it, when they're splitting up the teams, they make sure that John Jones is the chairman of the Justice League.
I like it, yeah.
So at the end of it, they're building the Hall of Justice. They never show it, because they're going to show it in Justice League 1.
Right.
But they're building the Hall of Justice, and then like they unanimously vote John Jones, chairman of the Justice League, and they do it. John Jones doesn't accept it until the vote from Kal-El.
Yep.
And he says, "All right, Cal, I guess all I can say is thanks." Yep. So that's what I like. Like, Scott Snyder definitely knows how to make a Justice League, but he does it with calling back to the heart of the Justice League that we know.
Yeah.
And that Justice League we know is led by the one that contains them all, and it's Martian Manhunter.
I mean, there's been a lot of that. They talk about a lot throughout DC's recent history that he does kind of glue everybody together. I mean, literally, because he can meld
with their minds. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
But also, he's kind of like Superman-esque, where he's a total outsider. But I see. I don't know his current canon, but he's
no. So in his story after Rebirth, he went on a crusade. They mention it. Like, I know you've been gone forever, but now you're back. He went on a crusade to like figure out the true genetic difference between the white and green Martians.
Well, I was going to say, it's because he's been around longer than Superman and living as a man.
Oh, that, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like, yeah. He's another weird outsider, but also has this big connection to Earth. Well, but in a different way than Superman.
His empathy comes from a different level than Superman's, right?
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, Superman was raised as a human.
Yeah, but Martian Manhunter delve into the human psyche.
He's been living as a human, but he is not, and never was. He didn't grow up there.
He is Martian through and through.
Yeah, he has purposely put himself there to be there. That's I like that. That kind of makes him a little more of a connected tissue.
Sure.
I don't know.
So No Justice as an event. It's middling. It really is. What happened? Kolu died. Kolu is dead. That's
Other thing that it should worth mentioning. So Brainiac shrinking technology came from Kolu.
Uh-huh.
Kolu had
Hundreds of worlds,
thousands of worlds. Yeah, yeah. A literal entire new space sector worth of worlds.
Yeah, like it expanded a new space sector of worlds.
So
yeah.
They've set up a lot of things with this comic with the three new Justice League teams.
Sounds like a lot of things that could pay off very interestingly as well. Like, yeah. It really turn out...
This took Convergence and did it better.
Yeah.
It sounds like that also opens up the door for someone really dropping the ball.
It also expanded on there's a crack in the Source Wall.
Yeah, the Source Wall, which makes sense with some recent rumors that with Grant Morrison going to be writing Green Lantern, and his story is going to be about...
holding the wall.
The multiverse is broken. Mm-hmm. And, well, they talk about that in this. Like, it's
the multiverse is dying, and we're accepting the fucking remnants of it.
Yeah, because the Source Wall broke. Which, that's the thing. This comic starts with that the Source Wall is broken.
Yeah, like, it's not really Green Arrow can't get in contact with Hal or any of the Earth Lanterns because they're at the Source Wall holding the, like, stitching it together.
Okay. Yeah.
And then eventually Ollie's able to play a Gambit card that, like, makes him able to reach Hal, and the stitch falls apart because Hal comes back to Earth to stop the Omega Titans.
Mm. Yeah, then he...
But in doing that, like, the Green Lantern still has, like, an outpost there. And you can see it in the end of it. Oh, they've still got, like, a scaffolding there.
They've got it. So that... It does set up a lot of stuff like that with Source Wall being busted. Not a big focus of the issue, other than it's busted. The Titans came back because of it.
Yeah.
It also sets up the new Space Sector.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which would... I mean, you could do so much, especially,
well,
like...
Tamaran is there, yeah.
Because Tamaran, like, it wasn't even just, like... Here's a bunch of worlds that were stored.
Here's some random shit. Starfire's like, that's my home.
Yeah, like Starfire's home planet is there for some reason.
Yeah, and she's got this big beef with Sinestro and stuff.
Yeah,
like that. Yeah.
They set up a lot of stuff.
You think they'll put any other lost planets in this space?
Well, no. Ran and Thanagar are already accounted for. We've got like the those storied planets in the DC universe: Korrigar, Ran, Thanagar, Tamaran. Mm-hmm. Like, there are all these planets that we've all, Krypton, like,
they're all, for the most part, accounted for.
Yeah. Okay. These are, like, thousands of new ones.
Oh.
Which, that, I mean, like, they've been stored for so long that, like...
Like, people have forgotten about them.
Yeah, these are new worlds as far as the universe is concerned.
Yeah.
So
it's... Because Kolu has been doing this for generations upon generations.
Yeah, just storing worlds because...
Ridiculous.
They're insane.
I want to throw one more review in here before we get into Doomsday, and it's Man of Steel. I read Man of Steel by Brian Michael Bendis, art by Ivan Reis and Miguel Prado. Great art, Tyler.
Oh, yeah, done.
Fucking phenomenal art. Story is actually really good.
I do not doubt the art's amazing.
So, there's two parts to this story. The first part of the story is the Man of Steel. It's Bendis writing Superman like Superman is a hero day-to-day. Like, he talks about... I was listening for the screams down this one block of Metropolis, and I happened to hear someone compose a brand new song. And I fucking listened to the song and loved it. My faith in humanity is restored. Like, that part of Superman, fucking perfect. It was great. Bendis talks about, like, it was a total accident. I was listening for a scream, and this woman was preparing a song for her lover.
Mm-hmm.
And I just listened to the song, and I was like, oh my God, I love humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard the screams, and the screams became a staccato. And the reason they became a staccato is because a tenement fire happened.
Mm-hmm.
And Superman handles a fire.
Yeah. I knew he would nail that stuff. The
back part of the story is there's a gathering of a series of elders of the universe. There's a guardian of the universe there. There's an ancient fucking Korrigarian. There's an ancient, like, whatever the old school, like, you know, the Elders of the Universe in Marvel.
That's
whatever
the
they
DC
are
version.
In DC, there's a gathering of minds. There's a gathering of minds, right? And in front of them is Ryogal, and he says Krypton is out of control, and it's back in the past. And he says, I need to wipe out Krypton. I need to make sure Krypton is destroyed, and. A guardian of the universe, Appa Aliapsa, if you know your Green Lantern lore.
Is that... Wait, which one's that?
If you know your Green Lantern lore, he is the precursor to Ganthet.
Okay.
He's the one who started to... He started the fire, and then Ganthet ignited it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So Appa Aliapsa comes to this guy, and he's like, we have decided that Krypton needs to run its natural course. And this, it's like Rogal Var, or whatever this guy is, he decides, no, I'm going to make sure Krypton dies in a fire. And this new lore is that this guy causes the eruption of Krypton.
I don't like.
Yeah.
But like, that's the thing. Like, you have a great, that's the dichotomy of Man of Steel. You have this really fucking great Superman story, and then you're rewriting his prehistory.
I don't like the rewriting the origin. I think it takes away more than it
I
gives.
I think it does. I think it does, too. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
we'll
I
see
can't
what
judge
happens.
It until we see exactly. Like, I mean, I can almost see Bendis' thing being like, this is this guy's mission, and that's what he went to do. And the Elder, like, the Guardian's telling him, we're going to let it run a natural course, and they know it is going to die no matter what. Imminently.
Well, that's probably what's going to happen.
Yeah, like, it turns out he thought he blew it up, but it was going to happen anyways.
Yeah.
Like, that day or something. So,
I just really wish there wasn't this, like, agent provocateur. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, no, like, we don't need one single agent that destroyed Krypton. It's better as it just died.
As a society failed to see
the imminent collapse.
Yeah,
yeah, right? Like Rome falling or something like that. Like, we need to stick with that because it... that baked in hubris builds on the Superman mythos.
Yeah, that, I think that's better than somebody blowing it up. Yeah. But like I said, until it ends, all we I can say know. Is I don't like that idea.
It's a five-week series, 4-week series.
I thought it was six. Either way, it's weekly.
It's weekly. They're going to have a rotating cast of artists. We'll probably touch on it next week. But let's talk about Doomsday Clock, because issue 5 yes. came out, and that's a good story.
It is. It's a Watchmen comic through and through, that's for sure.
It is a Watchmen comic, and I think that's the best compliment you can give this. Even down to the 9-panel
construction, like the whole fucking 90% of the way here.
Yeah.
And even the also the add-ins at the end of it and stuff, like you can give this, like, this is a Watchmen continuation.
There's even, like, the side story of that,
the pulp, detective comic.
Yeah, the pulp.
The noir story.
Yeah, the pulp noir story. It's like the Black Freighter.
Yeah, Nate, what's his name?
Oh, God. All I know is it's Nate. I don't remember his last name.
Nate Kickass.
Nate Kickass.
it's a pulp detective story.
I think
it's
better than the Black Freighter, because the Black Freighter was always, it's tacked onto the end, and it, if you read it, it
Black Freighter happens in between. Like, it totally...
I thought it was at the end of every issue.
No. It's mid between a lot of issues. Okay. It's just like this.
Why do I remember being at the end? Well, because that's my B.
Smoking dope.
I probably was. I was back in my college, my wild college days.
in the 80s.
I personally like it a little better because the Black Freighter, while it tells the story of Watchmen, kind of.
It does. It
like
totally does.
The whole way through.
Like, it's a coming home story, but it's a coming home story that's totally twisted.
It's ridiculous. It's, all the layers where it connects are way... It's kind of abstracted because it's a totally different genre. This is kind of the same kind of story they're telling.
They're both mysteries.
Yeah. So I kind of like that a little better than Watchmen's thing. But
I also love the noir, just fucking... Uh-huh. He came into the room and this is what I smelt on him. Like, it's just... Yeah. It's totally like... A narrator versus what's happening in the scene.
You're right. Yeah, it was good, actually. I'm glad I read it before we decided to, because I wasn't going to.
So
it opens with, Adrian Veidt in the hospital because he's been found. Guy fell 35 stories and he's still alive, huh? Yeah. Like
broken rib and, like, a bruised lung or something?
Yeah, that's
like
all he comes away
with.
Yeah,
so he's all fucked up. The new Rorschach has escaped prison with Saturn Girl.
What's good... Good move on the Rebirth story.
They finally did that. And also, along with Rebirth story, Johnny Thunder.
Yeah.
He has left his elderly home to go back to American Steel, I think it was.
Pittsburgh, yeah.
Yeah, because...
I need to go to American Steel. Where's that? Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Well, you can't afford the train, I'm sorry. That was a sad scene.
It's real sad.
It's a real sad scene.
His whole story is really sad because he, like, in the Rebirth comic, he was... Like,
he was Johnny Thunder. Like,
yeah,
that's him.
Like, he remembered all this stuff or started to remember things and nobody believed him. And it's like this weird story about an old man who remembers things that nobody else
does. But if you know, like, old school JSA stuff, like, this guy's a hero.
Mm-hmm.
This guy has an alternate, like, this guy has a counterpart, the Genie, who is ridiculously awesome.
Yeah, he... Old school JSA, and I like where...
And then he's going for the lantern? I'm like, fuck!
I kind of didn't... I mean, he did mention, like, he's got... I think he mentioned before you see
it. He said he's going for Alan's lantern.
Yeah. But until they really show it, I was like... I wasn't quite sure exactly where they're going with it, but it looks like, yeah, they're this is a very, very ambitious comic. Trying to tell a Watchmen story while bringing back...
The JSA.
JSA and the Legion.
Absolutely.
Like, it's... This comic could go
like, the
so
Legion
bad.
Of Superheroes and the JSA. You're trying to bring back 37 characters in the span of 12 issues.
The other thing is... So, the vague kind of the idea is that Dr. Manhattan escaped... His world to our, or not
to
ours,
the DC
to
universe,
the DC universe,
and has reshaped that world somehow.
Yeah,
but then Adrian Veidt says, "I think he just came here to observe."
Yeah, just to see. I kind of like the idea that because when he left in Watchmen, he wanted to go
create some life,
life, basically rediscover the idea of humanity, mm-hmm. like something good.
Yeah, yeah.
And this comic seems to be about. DC Comics rediscovering the JSA and the Legion.
Do you not see a little bit of Kingdom Come coming in here?
Especially because
with the loss of faith in heroes and stuff like that.
I did like that little thread going on, the Superman theory, I think they
call it. Yeah, yeah, it's the metahuman theory based on Superman.
I think they call it the Superman theory.
Yeah.
Or superhuman theory, but
Superman something, let me see it.
They name it after Superman, and that's why Lois goes to talk to Lex about it, because she thinks that
he named it.
And he's like, no, I didn't. I agree with it, but I didn't.
Let me tell you everything I know about the Superman theory, Lois.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I do like the familiarity they have, too. He's like, I'll always make that time
rapport,
for you.
That rapport, yeah.
Yeah,
that
like
rapport is Superman great. Theory.
Superman theory, that's yeah. right.
I knew it wasn't Superman
and then,
theory.
No, but Lois calls him out, and he's like, only you would name it after the person you hate the most. Like, yeah. She says it.
Yeah. But he's like, no, I didn't. There's a lot of different stories going on here at once. And it's, honestly, it's advancing them all very slowly.
So, I think Adam hit it right. It's a Watchmen story.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Because it is. It's so, not only is it framed as Watchmen, like, think about Watchmen on a plot basis. It's framed that way.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it jumps timelines. Yeah, exactly. Like, it jumps characters. It jumps timelines. It jumps everything. But also, you're like, it's a whodunit. Like, it comes down to, like, who did this?
Yep. What is going on?
Exactly. And it comes down to who fucked with the DC universe.
Well, and that's exactly what The Watchmen is the base of it is it's a whodunit, or who's going to do it, really.
It comes down to Veidt did it.
Well, I mean, it is a whodunit. Who killed the comedian is how it starts.
Yeah. I guess that's true, yeah.
But now, the thing that this, now that we're almost halfway, has kind of made me think about is, you know, the beginning, it was like, this is going to be a Watchmen story in DC Universe. We all knew Dr. Manhattan was going to show up at some point. And the thought I was thinking was, okay, is this going to come down to, like, a fight? Superman versus Dr. Manhattan.
That'd be a cool fight.
Now, it would be, but, I mean, Superman would lose horribly.
Yeah. It's going to come down to talking, isn't it?
But that's the thing. I think the way this is going now, it's going to come
Superman's
down to...
Superman's
going to
be the one that convinces Dr. Manhattan that there's still humanity left in the
world. Exactly. It's going to be coming down...
Because he is the most human motherfucker there is.
Yeah, it's not going to come down to how powerful Superman is as Superman.
How human he is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that... I like that, like, helping Dr. Manhattan rediscover that. Same time DC rediscovers the Legion.
Their own humanity. Exactly.
The things that people love about DC Comics in the past.
To be honest.
Their history.
Some of the JSA stories, harkening back to the early 2000s and the late 90s, some of those are really good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Some of those are great. Like Wildcat finding his own place as a non-powered character while his son is a powered character. And he teaches his son boxing and all that Daredevil stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he has to face his own hubris as he's getting fucking old and stuff.
He won't be
or
able to
you
keep
see
up forever, yeah.
The insanity of Starman, Tyler. You gotta remember Starman.
I know the exact run you're talking about. That was an epic story for
that
Starman.
Interlaced with Kingdom Come and stuff like that.
And
Magog
then
was in that
off in Final
shit.
Crisis,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, so... I think Tyler hit it on the head. This is an ambitious series.
There's a reason, I think. I mean, at first, maybe I thought the delays were Gary Frank's art, which we didn't
mention.
But
some of this may be writing, you know?
Like, no, I was going to say, like, this art is fantastic. We didn't even mention. I thought
that
was delays.
Holy fuck, dude. When Batman's getting hit by the mob, I'm oh man, he's believing every one of those punches, man.
Yeah, but
we
now
didn't even
thinking...
mention that. We didn't even mention that. Like, Batman is at the mercy of the mob in this. At the end of it, you said, like, look at this, look what I have under me.
Well,
look who's under my knife.
The fucking
come on,
Joker
dude.
Meets up with the Marionette.
With the Marionettes, yeah.
And at the exact same time as Joker's goons, that we found Batman.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was going to say, I think part of the delays now, I think it is a lot of the writing. Pulling this together is so ambitious. It's unbelievable.
But they're doing a great job so far.
Yeah, there hasn't been a misstep, I think. I'm so,
also,
so
there's
curious.
There's the supplemental content talking about, like, superheroes abroad.
I
the Markovia stuff.
I didn't even read all of it, but, like, he's building a crazy world here.
Kandak is now my favorite fucking country in this world.
Yeah, because it's a fucking
asylum. Safe haven. That's fucking... I love Black Adam.
Black Adam's incredible.
this is like 52 Black Adam.
Yeah.
Like, this is like, take no prisoners. I am I have Black Adam.
I'm not a villain. I'm not a hero.
I am the sovereign of my country. Yeah. Like very Doom. Doom of him. Exactly.
Very Doom of him.
It's Black Adam is best when he's this.
Yeah, I'll agree.
Like he is a villain, ruling
single dimensional character, but like
he is a ruling sovereign who is brutal as fuck.
This right here, this thing that we're all talking about, this is what I love about good comics.
Oh yeah, they're incredible.
They will charge you, they will enthuse you, they will make you like This is what storytelling should be.
But it's also the same thing that gets me really bummed out about bad comics, is because it's like you could do this.
Yeah, exactly.
You could be so much better than you are.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's the fear with something like Man of Steel. Man of Steel has this potential to be really good,
mm-hmm.
but it also has this thing that it started on its own. Like you could really fuck this up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could really fuck with the timeline of Superman and really fuck this up bad.
Oh, they could still drop the ball with this.
Well, Doomsday Clock, I have less of a fear because let's look at the 5 issues that they've done so far.
They've all been solid. They've all been continually good.
They've also adhered to the thing that is Watchmen.
Oh, absolutely. It's stayed very true to what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, like, even as far as, like, they're not revealing the things that they, like, if this was a 6-issue series, we would have known so much more.
Oh, yeah.
But they've already planned. This is a 12-issue series. We know as much as they want us to know.
Hey, sometimes you gotta let a good story just simmer on the back burner.
Soak a little bit, right?
Just like, let it marinate in its own juices.
Yeah, so this story is marinating very slowly.
It's marinating
very slowly.
That's a good reveal by the Joker, by the way. That's a great entrance. Also, Tyler, I don't know if you noticed, but the blood is going lower on the back cover.
I didn't notice that. I need to line my issues up.
Has the clock been moving closer?
Oh, hell yeah, it has.
I thought it would have, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, hey, it just kind of goes towards my theory.
That's also a Watchmen trope.
It's going to end with Superman because the clock has Superman at midnight. Yep. The Superman symbol at midnight as we get closer and closer.
Did you guys see the always has. Like, also, well before it was even fucking issue one.
There's a 3 minutes to midnight reference in this issue, too.
Is there?
Yeah,
I think it has to do with Johnny Thunder, but I could be wrong. But there is a 3 minutes to midnight reference. Either way, let's get into the third segment. In the third segment, ladies and gentlemen, last time we talked, we were talking about Batman. This time we're going to talk about the man, the myth, the legend that is Superman.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot to be said about this character.
I've got less to say than I did about Batman.
I doubt that. I really do. Because I think Superman is... He is the embodiment of Cape Comics. He's the one. Like, were you to think about 3-color, 4-color comics,
Superman.
You think about Superman, ooh. And then you go into the other characters. Like, who's a superhero? Superman. So I want to start off where we do with comic books, and I want to start off with writers. Do you have a favorite Superman writer?
And this is where I was getting more. I'm gonna have less to say about Superman than I am about Batman.
But think about it, man. Like, there's like Frank Miller wrote Superman in Batman versus Super or Batman: The Dark Knight Returns.
It's true.
He wrote a really fucking good Superman.
That's true. Right, you're right. Who wrote All-Star?
Grant Morrison.
That's probably my favorite Superman.
Yeah. This thing I was gonna say, if I had to pick,
do you remember the Superman 100-Minute War?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that was
James Robinson.
Okay,
it was really fucking good. I don't know if I ever actually finished it.
Speeding Bullets, that's another Superman story.
Never read it.
See, I like Superman stories. I like Superman as a character that, like we've been talking about, he is like the quintessential superhero. I like stories about Superman that encompass that.
Sure.
So they're going to be things like a Superman for All Seasons, Jeff Loeb. That's pretty good.
Good story, yeah.
But I think that All-Star Superman does it better. I think that is the best Superman story ever written. But that
so
means,
we're talking about writers. We're talking about writers real quick.
Yeah.
Superman.
Yeah, writer. Like, I think that boils Superman down to, like, you don't need to know anything else. It has the best first page fucking ever for Superman.
Describe it.
It's four panels. If I remember correctly, the text is Doom Planet, Desperate Scientists, Last Hope.
Kindly Couple.
Kindly Couple is the last one.
Kindly Couple, Last Hope is the
Oh, I think, well, either way, it's those, and it's just like, it breaks down, like, it shows his parents, it shows Krypton blowing up, it shows him landing, it shows the Kents getting him, and it's like,
that's Superman.
That's the beginning of Superman. They boiled it down perfectly, and then the rest of the comic is fucking incredible. But I was going to say, there are some single issues that are also incredibly perfect Superman. Like, we talked about a couple weeks ago.
What about the one where whatever happened to Truth, Justice, and the American Way?
That's Alan Moore.
Yeah.
That one's fantastic. I was going to bring that up. We just talked about a couple weeks ago, Action Comics 1000. I mean, all the writers in that, except for Bendis's, are incredible. Also, Joe Kelly's... What is that one called? It's not Whatever Happened to... It's the one that Superman vs. Elite is based on.
That's the one I thought. I was talking about. Is Whatever Happened to Truth, Justice, and the American Way.
No, you're right. When you said that, I think Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow. Man of Tomorrow. Mine is
Whatever Happened to Truth, Justice, and the American Way.
Yeah, that one, Joe Kelly.
That's Superman versus the Elite.
Yeah,
and
you're
that's the one where he goes, well, what happens? And he totally decimates every one of their arguments just because of how powerful he is.
Yeah, and that book is so fucking incredible. It's so
Superman 776. Action Comics like 776.
It's one issue.
Yeah.
It's one issue that is just so fucking good. It's unbelievable.
Let's give our listeners and Adam some frame of reference. So there's a time where this super team comes through and just decides to do like in Justice and start taking care of problems.
Killing criminals.
Superman versus the Elite. Okay, so it's Superman versus the Elite. It's that. It's the origin of that comic.
Okay.
So it's Whatever Happened to Truth, Justice, and the American Way, and Superman proves, like, this is what happens when I decide to do, like, myself to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fucking poignant comic.
There's a reason that it is one of the best Action Comics issues ever.
So the question was, who's the best Superman writer?
Oh, Grant Morrison.
Grant Morrison. Adam, who's the best Superman writer?
I honestly don't have enough to pull from here. Like,
Well, what about... Like, your first comic, your first story was The Death of Superman.
It was. I don't know who the writer is.
Is that one that you would pull from, though, or, like...
I mean, yes, and I mean, I definitely gleaned a lot of stuff.
Think about your stuff from Superman. What do you know of Superman? What stories pull from you for Superman?
I mean, honestly, other than All-Star Superman, and then the stuff that I read of him, and The Death of Superman, and the stuff that I read of him and other things...
And other stuff, yeah.
I don't really have read a lot of, like... Superman-centric stories.
Do you have a Superman moment, like a Superman comic moment that sticks out for you? And it's fine if you just pull from The Death of Superman. That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it probably would be The Death of Superman.
Let's find out who wrote that.
That this instilled into me, or kind of taught me at a very, very young age before I realized what I was learning, and there's something that I picked up more of what I actually learned later on, is it's just that in the face of absolute annihilation... It's true tragedy, you will always see people running in to help. You will, like, even if most of the crowd is running the other way, you will always see people going. And that's what Superman does in The Death of Superman. Is he's just like, no, it doesn't matter what happens to me. There are other people here that have just as much of a right to live as I do.
So the writing team behind Death of Superman, Dan Jurgens, Roger Stern, Louis Simonson, Jerry Ordway, and Carl Kessel. So that team, that's your team. That's,
yeah. And I mean, I'm not even saying that's the best team at all. That's just probably the most influential and the Superman story I know the most.
To be honest, Adam, that story, The Death of Superman, rocks me every time. Every time. You know why? Because it expands every issue. It's if you look at the art and the writing of it, it expands from smaller panels to bigger panels every issue, to the point where the stuff that happens in the last issue is all one pagers.
Yep, they're all splashes.
Like, I fully feel that writing note. Mm-hmm. My favorite Superman writer will always and forever be Jeff Johns for.
Oh, I was gonna say he is a very good. There's a very good argument for him being. Also, maybe the best because of, I think you're going to say Secret Origins. Yeah.
It's really fucking good. It's a six-issue series, and it's just Superman Secret Origins, and it's really fucking good.
I think
he captures what it is to be Clark Kent and Superman in one story, in one arc. he captures it all.
Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of updates to Superman's past. I mean, originally he and Lex never grew up together.
Yeah, yeah. This Look, comes off I of a Smallville. Like.
I'm still not a big
fan. Then read Secret Origins and you'll change your mind.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, like,
because to me that made the Superman world too small. You know, like
I'll give you that. You
know? It does make that, it really small, make it small. But I think it also helps illustrate how different they are as people. Like they
well, has Lionel, they, what, where Lionel Luther
because
came from
they're, because
versus
they're different
where,
upbringings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Versus where the Kents came from. And
yeah,
stuff.
Exactly.
But
so
you
yeah.
can still get that without them knowing each other. With
sure.
Lex being raised as a city boy.
Well, they
with
don't.
A fucking rich
they only
father.
Meet. They meet like twice.
They meet
because the
they didn't
story.
Like grow up together. It's not like Smallville.
Oh, yeah,
where
yeah,
they're,
yeah.
Where they're great
no,
buddies.
It's more like. They come together for a science fair, and then boom, again, they're across.
Oh,
like,
okay, see, yeah. that I'm a lot more
they,
okay
they grew
with
in
the
same
the whole
town, I guess.
Like, they grew up in the same town, but they don't go to the same schools.
They
don't,
they
well,
kind
of
like, know each
a
other a little
meet,
bit.
Yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not like buddies hanging at each other's house, but having them
each other
grow
existence.
Up in the same place at the same time.
And Superman saved him,
yeah.
you know, from a... thing and
yeah I really like I just love that addition to the mythos. It's one of the few like changes to a long-running character's origin that I think adds a whole lot.
Well, see,
so let's go
probably because of the way the story was done, because even if they barely knew each other was done wrong, for lack of a better
wouldn't
word,
be as good
it wouldn't
yeah.
be nearly
so
as
how
good.
About this, they barely knew each other, Mark Millar, Red Sun. That is a good
that's
Superman
a very
story.
Good, that's a very fucking good Superman story.
And they
story.
Barely know each other the whole time. They meet on diplomatic terms as opposed to personal terms.
Yeah.
In Red Sun. So we're still talking writers here.
Yeah.
That is a good bent.
No, it
that
is.
That is a good mm. bent
well,
to Superman story.
It's a what if, and those have a lot more freedom to
do
weird
they
stuff do. Like that.
Yeah.
But it's a
but
very
good but that's a
good take.
Bent. Yeah. That's so let's go artist and
oh, I already got it in the bag.
My I have to disagree with you, and call out Kingdom Come, Alex Ross.
Okay, Alex Ross.
Alex Ross always has the.
I know.
Blood, but asterisks. But also look at Alex Ross. Yeah.
But I'm calling out just specifically Kingdom Come Superman.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. That is
fuck.
It's like almost every time. Kingdom okay, Come. So he starts off. There's no. I don't think I can't think of a single page in Kingdom Come where like Superman doesn't look like
epic.
But when he like re-embraces being Superman.
He has the cape.
He just has, like, the bearing for it. Like, and Alex Ross draws that perfectly.
Well, he always draws him at an up angle. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, he's coming down to Earth.
Yeah, no, I...
They
I
always draw
say up angle, do you mean from up down or
no,
from
they,
down up?
From down. Okay. They always draw Superman from you're a human
you're
looking
up,
at
him,
yeah.
yeah. I think that is a close second. However, I think Frank quietly did it better than anybody because...
Oh, I changed my answer. Gary Frank. I changed my answer.
Well, actually, it's funny you bring up Gary Frank because, well, he did Secret Origins. Very fantastic. You before we recorded this, showed us some we've talked about before and we've all seen before, the clip from Superman.
Where he changes from Clark to...
Yeah, like he takes Lois back to the top of her apartment and then he drops her off.
25
seconds later, he's back at the apartment door as Clark. And he... Basically, like, she goes to grab a jacket, and he's talking as Clark, takes his glasses off.
Lois?
Yeah, like pulls himself back up,
like
deepens his voice.
Straighter?
Yeah, and like...
Almost
one,
breaks
he says,
to her.
Lois, I have something I need to tell you. And you okay, it's Superman just in a tux.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. That transformation, I have never seen drawn better than in... Frank Quietly Superman.
Okay.
It's there's even if you get the All-Star Superman collections, there are sections where he does like in the back of one of them where he shows some sketches he was doing. And he actually like I mean you've seen how you know the classic way to draw like you draw a stick figure and then make the like an oval for the torso kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, and just
like
with the head with the cross in the middle so
yeah.
you section out
it's
the
show,
head.
Showing kind of doing that but a little more detailed. But showing the difference in that between when he draws Clark versus Superman and how he hunches over and
sure.
how he does that. And just because of the...
That would be really interesting to see.
There's also that line in Identity Crisis where Also, Clark raises his voice an octave and he hunches his shoulders and buys clothes that are too big for him.
Yeah. It's all that kind of thing. But I think because he can, Frank quietly nails that drawn difference. Like, his Clark is never, like, shriveled and pathetic, but he's a smaller dude.
But he still looks like he's corn-fed Kentucky boy.
Yeah, like, that's what he looks like.
But and he's a kind of a
Kansas boy.
But at the same time, there are such good panels of him just being Superman. Like, I will never, I will never forget. I don't know why I love it so much, but it's toward the end of All-Star Superman where the solar computer is attacking Earth, and it's this being in the future is helping humanity, and he's dropped down to the street, and Superman comes up to him, and the guy's like, "No, don't hit me! You'll kill me!" And Superman just winds up a punch and says, "You'll live," and then decks him right in his eyeball. But like the panel of him pulling back this punch is just so good. It's perfect. I just fucking love it. And the way he draws Superman's face, that's why I think he's the best Superman artist. He can nail not only the difference, but also just the dynamic action.
Just for listener edification, we have Frank Quitely, obviously.
Yeah.
We have Gary Frank, and we have Alex Ross. Those are the three that we associate with Superman.
Yeah, I think we could go for that.
Okay, cool.
But Gary Frank is real fucking close. Cause
so good, dude. Like, whatever his Superman is right now in Doomsday Clock, but also look at him in Secret Origins.
Yeah, really really, Adam, you need to read that because it's so fucking good.
Let's talk about television. Superman television, specifically.
Oh. This is going to be
Lois and Clark.
Lois
and Clark.
Tom Kane?
No, Dean Kane.
Dean Kane. Why am I thinking Tom?
Dean Kane and Terry Hatcher. They were the two, Lois and Clark. Very much a drama, not so much superhero show.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, there would be some dun da 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 da. But most of the time. I
rewatched that whole thing a couple of years ago.
You shouldn't have.
No, it held up a lot better than I expected it to.
They got married on that show before they got married in the comics.
Yeah.
They also tackled the whole, can Superman and Lois have a child before they did in the comics.
Let's talk about the thing in television that we all really want to talk about. And we're talking about cartoon television.
Oh, God.
Superman. Cartoon television for Superman specific. Bruce Timm. What we got? Obviously Bruce Timm. That's the main thing. But, how about favorite?
Max Fleischer?
Sure, Max Fleischer. $1 million an episode show.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah, Warner Brothers shelled out $1 million an episode in 1950s.
Like $1 million in 1950.
Holy shit. Just to make sure that shit lasted. Or we also have the George Reeves Superman. Those are the television series we have. We have George Reeves, Max Fleischer, and Bruce Timm. Tell me, guys. Talk to me.
The thing is, Bruce Timm, if we're talking TV shows and we're looking at animation, the Bruce Timm universe is the one.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way.
Without a doubt.
Clancy Brown is the is Luther, and he played a black guy.
Yeah. Well, an Italian.
All right.
He's an olive-skinned man. But, yeah. Which is also probably my favorite depiction of Luther.
Best Luther, I think, is that Luther.
So I think Bruce Timm is like, that is the cartoon Superman. I mean, partially because it was
introduced Mr. Mazelplick. Mr. Mazelplick is in that Superman.
Yeah. I think it's the best, not only because it's so long running that it just defined it all, but just the look from the beginning. Bruce Timm's art is really, really
chest heavy.
I was gonna say, like, the way they draw him,
works
like he's
really
got that.
Well, for Superman, didn't work as well for Batman.
Works great for Superman.
Yeah,
works
he's got that wonderful. Inverted triangle look.
Yeah.
And it works really well for animation. It's simplistic, but it's also okay. So
it's also got a good Lois Lane.
Good artist,
like a really good Lois Lane too.
She was the main
story a couple times.
Well, and that Lois Lane defined what I hold all Lois Lanes to.
Right?
You know, that sassy fucking
Is that more reporter. So than Margot Kidder, really?
Yeah, I think so. I really do.
It might be because it's so long running, though.
It could be. And it was, not only was it long running, but I was very influential at the time.
Sure, I was a child growing up.
It was, although those were the Superman movies, and they're still good. They were my dad's Superman.
We talked about the B-Test, the Batman Adventures. But the Superman was the spawn of Bruce Timm's Batman.
Yeah.
It modeled itself after the Batman the animated series. It totally did. So Parasite, Brainiac, Calibac, like the Darkseid, all of those villains came from Superman the animated series before they bled into Justice League.
Yeah.
So like all that stuff had like Parasite. Oh my God, Parasite. Like, you know, Brainiac was a big part of Superman. Mr. Mixaplane.
That look for Brainiac is fantastic.
Well, he looks like Kal-El, actually. He looked like just like a three-part little thing right there.
The weird thing about Bruce Timm's art is they all kind of shape the same, but
Sinestro looks good just artists, like Brainiac.
Good artists can do, you can look at a silhouette of their art. You can black it out and look at it, and you know who that is.
Jim Lee, Jason Babcock, yeah.
Even though the Bruce Timm designs are really similar, I think you can black them out and
still see enough variance.
You know who they are.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's part of why it's so strong is that it's not like you just did a superhero outline and you put it in there. So even though it's a simplistic style, you fucking know who that is. Sure. It is so good. But I was going to say really quick before we move on.
From television?
Well, before we talk more about this, Bruce Timm, I think, is the defining one. But I think Max Fleischer's look and just everything about it is just unbelievably impressive.
Well, that's where more powerful than a locomotive, faster than a speeding bullet, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
Yeah.
All of that came from Max Fleischer's show. And you, Adam, and I were watching it, I don't know, a couple weeks back.
Yeah.
And we were making fun of it, but at the same time, we were like, this is pretty fucking good animation.
So, yeah, the animation, I mean, yeah, he does silly things.
Him, pulling the electricity off him and stuff.
Oh, my God. That's, or just, that's like, pulling, what, like, a like tanks apart and shit. Like,
bending the tube on a tank and stuff.
There are hokey parts, too, where, like, a building falls over, but, like, the building falls over.
But he bends. Well, it bends.
And he pushes the whole building back up. It's like, the building doesn't crumble at all. It falls as one piece.
Like, it curves.
The thing I like about that is, we get in the Bruce Timm Superman look that he's like super strong and he'll like punch shit all the time. But Max Fleischer Superman I feel like that showed him having these incredible feats of superhuman strength in a way better way.
As opposed to just punching shit hella hard.
Yeah, it's not like he's just a super strong dude and you can see his power.
He
did weird shit like that.
But buildings also curved. Instead of bending at a 90-degree angle. You know what I mean? Like, buildings went like an accordion as opposed to being like physics.
Toppling, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Then we have to talk about movies.
Oh, man.
So, I think, to be honest, my least favorite Superman is probably Superman Returns. He does a great Christopher Reeves impression, which you cannot deny.
Punches anything.
I know, but he does a great Christopher Reeves impression.
100%, yeah.
But he's not Superman.
No.
My favorite Superman? Probably Christopher Reeves.
Well, yeah. No, he is the best live action Superman.
I believed a man can fly. I was born in 87. Like, I believed a man can fly 10 years after
that. Yeah. That clip that I mentioned you showed us, like, that is a perfect example. He embodies that.
Yeah.
He did it, you will believe a man can fly, but also that he sold the idea that a regular, unassuming reporter can be Superman.
So we're talking about so Superman drops Lois Lane off after the,
their first flight,
Can you read my thoughts? Mm-hmm. Can you read my mind? And, in 25 seconds, he turns around in the frame and it becomes Christopher Reeves becomes Clark Kent. And then in the span of 2 minutes, embodies both the quintessential Clark Kent and plays Superman. And you're left in awe. You have nothing else to say but, I believe in Superman.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The music for that movie will give me chills until the day I die.
John Williams. Mm-hmm. He's the same guy that made the Star Wars music.
Yeah.
He made the Jurassic Park
music.
And
the drum build, up in the beginning of that, too.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun,
Yeah. It's fucking ridiculous.
It's in the fucking opening credits, and you're just like, I'm crying.
Yeah.
It's already good.
Yeah.
Look, so that piece of music really does inspire feeling into people, dun, you dun, know?
Dun, dun, dun. Because he like builds up, he's about to fucking fly.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but like you get this really like melancholy like start and build up. It's like
they
very
used
deep
it
deep and dark, and
they
then
used it in Justice League.
Yeah,
in the new movie
they
used it. Yeah,
oh.
Yeah, when Superman shows up and stops Steppenwolf's fist.
Oh, you're totally right.
They fucking
yeah.
pull a John Williams, and you're just like, you fucking cheaters.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't earn this. You didn't earn this.
I mean, it's there's a lot of things in the DC recent movie universe that didn't earn it. Man of Steel kind of sucked, but it
had. Man of Steel has a great couple moments, though.
Like, yes, that's what I was going to say. Has a couple great moments. Like when the Terraformer is blasting down at him and they flash Chris Reeve's face. Like, you didn't fucking earn that, but that was rad.
It was
so fucking rad. Not earned, but amazing.
My favorite Superman. So I have two Superman movie moments that I think are above and beyond everything. The first one doesn't even involve Superman. It's Marlon Brando saying they can be a great people, Kal-El.
Kal-El.
If they choose to be. They only lack the light to show them the way. You're like, we do. We do lack the light to show them the way. Yes, please, we do.
Show
yes,
us Superman.
Please,
one of Marlon Brando's last great roles.
They do actually touch upon in Man of Steel, and I think, what's his fucking name that plays Kal-El?
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe's speech almost hits the same
note. No, that speech is cribbed from All-Star Superman.
It is.
Is it the
literally
so
word
bad.
For
yeah,
word.
Yeah.
Word for word.
That.
That, like, they
the,
could,
they'll
they,
stumble, they'll fall.
They'll
it,
stumble,
but
they'll
soon
fall.
They'll join you
someday
in the sun.
They could join you in the sun. That's from All-Star Superman.
Okay, because that speech is amazing.
That is one of the best scenes in All-Star Superman, where he's dying and, like, hallucinating.
Yeah.
But his dad is telling him, like, you know, consciousness persists after death, and you're like, okay, is he hallucinating, or is he literally talking to
him? Or is this really going
to
happen?
Is he really talking to his dad? Like, it's amazing. But that is pulled from All-Star Superman.
Mm-hmm. And that was really good.
And that is another example of an unearned moment. Like, it's really fucking good.
You know what is an earned moment?
What?
Is when in the 1977 Superman, Superman makes the change, and he pulls it off, and he catches the helicopter that's falling, and then he catches Lois, and she says, I've got you, Lois, and you've got me. Who's got you? And then he fucking carries it out onto the roof, and you just get that. It's that first crescendo in Superman the movie, and you're just like, God damn, this is the best character that it could ever be.
Yeah, I don't know how they. I mean, that was one of the first. I think it might have been. It can't have been the first superhero movie.
Probably not.
But that. I mean, that was in 70 what?
77. It's 77? Before Star Wars.
And somehow they nailed it on the first get-go. And then we got decades of mostly
hot
middling
garbage.
Shit, but occasional gold. But they nailed it on the first go, and I'm so happy that they did.
Thank you,
Richard Donner.
Yeah,
thank you. A little bit of
lore. Superman 2 had two directors, Richard Donner and then Alex Sulkind. There are two divergent stories of how Lois Lane discovers that Superman is super. In one, she shoots him. That's the Richard Donner one. The other one is Superman dives his hand into a fire and she sees it. But a fun fact out of that is the one to dig up the second, like the one where she shoots Superman, the dug up footage comes from a Richard Donner intern named Jeff Johns.
Oh, yeah. Which is also a nice, weird part of comic book history is that Jeff Johns was an intern for Richard Donner.
And he dug up that footage and then later became the leader of DC Comics.
Yeah, it's... God, that's just insane.
It is.
What a trip for Geoff Johns, though.
My favorite thing about Superman is something that I think Neil Gaiman hit really well. And it's, I have not read every story about Superman, and I think there are more than enough stories about Superman. But 100 years from now, there may not be written words, there may not be comic books, but I guarantee you someone around the age of 10 will want to know what's going on with Superman.
Mm-hmm. And even I think more so than Batman, Spider-Man, Wonder Woman. Somebody will always want to know what's Superman up to.
What is he still alive? Like, what's going on? Like, I think that's the best part about American comic books is someone's gonna want to know.
That's why the story Superman is the best.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for listening to this cavalcade of chaos that was episode 259.
Hey, Superman be sure to centric actually all the way
through. Yeah, like yeah. really,
like not just that third segment, but the fucking whole episode. Very Superman.
I think he is. To be honest, he's the best comic book character that there is.
He might be. Yeah.
I love Superman.
Like that's the thing though. It's like who doesn't? Who at some point on some level
people that are like he's got too many
monsters and Lex Luthor
he has so many powers that he's inhuman. I don't want to believe in Superman,
but that's not broken. The core of Superman, like yes, Superman is god tier when it comes to his powers, but it's his humanity that really builds
sets
him as
him
a character
apart exactly from everything right.
Yeah, we could keep going on and fucking on about it. Let's get out of here before the 4 episode.
Yeah. Thanks so much everybody for listening. There is a Comic Strip Plays this week. And then we'll see you guys next week for episode 260.
Yeah, guys. Bye. And gals and super folks.